You're listening to Princeton Lacks Cash, the official podcast of the six-time NCAA national champion Princeton men's lacrosse program. Now here's your host, Jerry Price.
This week's edition of the Princeton Lacks Cast is intended for mature audiences, and parental discretion is advised. This is Jerry Price with this week's edition of the Lacks Cast, and if you're wondering why I gave you that disclaimer to start, you probably figured it out by now. This week's special guest is Bryce Chase. Brycey, welcome to the Lacks Cast.
Hello, Jerry.
If you're a Princeton lacrosse alum or fan, you know Bryce. Bryce has been with the program longer than anybody. He has been here in every conceivable capacity that you can be with Princeton lacrosse, and he has been around more Princeton lacrosse players than anybody else since his undergraduate days in the early 1960s through to the current team. He was on the bus to Dartmouth last weekend, and Brycey is a wealth of knowledge on Princeton, all things Princeton lacrosse, and I'm looking forward to spending a few minutes talking with you about your experiences with Princeton and, you know, your take on a lot of the things. And I think this is a good week to do it because this weekend Princeton hosts Harvard Saturday at 1 o'clock, and there'll be halftime ceremonies honoring the 1967 team on the 50th anniversary of its Ivy League championship, the 1992 team on the 25th anniversary of the first NCAA championship in program history, and the 1997 team on the 20th anniversary of its perfect season and NCAA championship. And Brycey, I would think that's a lot of familiar faces for you coming back this weekend.
Very much so. I'm looking forward to it.
Let's talk a little bit about your roots in Princeton lacrosse. A local kid, Princeton High School, came here. When did you first start playing lacrosse, and when was the first time you saw Princeton play lacrosse?
I saw Princeton playing lacrosse growing up. My dad taught here. I was a gym rat, a field rat, and I watched football, baseball, basketball, lacrosse, even some no field hockey in the day, of course, was before the young ladies, but virtually all the sports, that's where I hung out. I never played lacrosse, though, till I came to Princeton. I was a baseball guy.
So how'd you end up playing lacrosse?
Freshman year in Pine Hall, I roomed with a bunch of Baltimoreans, I'd just come out of the Marine Corps, and I was fearful I was going to having trouble hitting the curve, and they pointed out that I could run just from screwing around playing touch football, so I went out for lacrosse as a freshman.
What was it like? What was it about the sport that drew you to it immediately?
It's a running sport then and now, it's a sport that has smart contact, I would call it. The guys who were the freshmen in that freshman class that told me I should give it a shot were good guys. It was fun hanging around with them, and so I guess it developed from that.
What was the home field when you were playing?
The home field was Finney Campbell. Finney was for the varsity. Campbell was mainly for the freshmen, although we played all over the place. We actually played on Poe Field. We played now where Fine Tower is. We even played across the street from the clubs, which is now, of course, all buildings. Pretty much everything has been built up since I started out.
Did you sense when you first started playing lacrosse that this was going to become such an important part of your life?
Not a clue.
What was the lure? Like, what was the thing that kept bringing you back to the lacrosse program?
As I think back on it, it was probably random. My classmate and good friend, Art Highland, who was the assistant basketball coach, was made the head freshman coach, and he didn't know his...
You can say it.
...ass from his elbow about lacrosse, a great athlete, and he said, Brycey, you want to help me? And so I started out as a freshman coach. I actually got paid then. I got paid $400 a year.
Coach the freshman team?
Help Art Highland coach the freshman team, because in those days you were required as a coach to coach more than one sport. Some coaches actually coached three sports. So anyway, then Art moved on, and I coached the freshmen for a couple of years. The freshmen got disbanded when they made them eligible, so then I coached what was a JV team. It was different, too. The JVs and the freshmen had their own bus and a nice schedule. So we were pretty independent. That my deal was to just inculcate the freshmen in some of the the ways, the mores of how the varsity would do when they moved up. So
you, if you don't know about Bryce, Bryce is a lawyer. He's been a lawyer in the area for a long time. Probably gets up earlier every day than anyone else I know. Do you set an alarm clock, or is your body just conditioned to get up at that time?
Body's conditioned ever since I was a Ute. Even in the Marine Corps, I was up before Reveille. So.
What time do you get up each day?
Well, as the sunset of my career approaches now, I'm actually sleeping in to around 4:45, 5 o'clock.
So you went to law school in Minnesota.
And I did.
You spent 3 years away from Princeton, probably the longest you've been away from this town. Not probably, it's the longest you've been away from this town. What was that like? And did you stay close to the program? Because some of these 67 guys who will be back, that's when you were in Minnesota for their first 3 years here.
That's correct. And the 67 guys and the 65, 66, 67 guys, I actually got to know them with the exception of my brother-in-law, who graduated in 67. I got to know all of them pretty well later on. While I was in Minnesota, I didn't know where for sure I was going to set up. I kind of thought I'd return to Princeton, but I wasn't sure. And so when I came back, coaching lacrosse just happened, and a little serendipity there, and here we are today.
So you're a big Princeton sports fan still. Season tickets, the whole shoot and match, men's and women's basketball, everything. You missed the Bill Bradley years.
No, I was fortunate. Bill Bradley graduated in 1965.
But you were in law school for the first two of those years, the last two of those years.
Right. We got to watch him as a freshman when Dylan Jim actually would almost fill up for his freshman team. They had Bradley and another guy who scored close to 28 points a game as a freshman, a guy named Chuck Burling, and then a third guy, a shooter. And watching those guys was, you know, more fun than getting hammered, I would have to say. Not that I would get hammered.
So I'm going to give you a few names, and just talk to me about your relationship with them and how it's evolved and, you know, where it started. And the first one is Bill Tierney, and it's the famous story of, you know, he became the head coach, program was down a bit, and your introduction to him was, I'll be your volunteer assistant coach and you're a lawyer.
That's a true story. It evolved only because the whole story was he had to buy a house and he needed an attorney, and I figured that I might as well step in there because I'd been an assistant to virtually all of his predecessors, Art Robinson, Mike Hanna, Jerry Schmidt. So when he came, I figured he might as well get the benefit of my advice as well as anybody else.
Did you have a sense of what he was going to be when he got here?
At first, absolutely not. But within about the first season, I immediately knew this guy was unique. I've told this to people before. At what he does, and I've been around a little bit, he's the best that I've ever seen in all aspects of it. Good man, good coach, good recruiter. Virtually all of the kids that graduated from his program look back on it fondly, which is saying something because when some of them were here, they didn't necessarily look upon him fondly. But afterward, because of the kind of man he is, they came to realize this was a good man, this was a good deal. I learned a lot.
Your relationship with him was not what your traditional head coach, assistant coach relationship would be. You almost were like, you know, I mean, how many times do you think you pulled him off the field before he attacked a ref or, you know, stepped in between him and a player? Not that, you know, yeah. Not to paint a negative light of Bill Tierney, but
not at all.
A fiery guy, obviously.
Yes. Jekyll and Hyde, in the living room recruiting, a consummate gentleman, at heart. And he would say to me, you know, sometimes I can't help it if I see something that I think is wrong. But a little bit of that is legendary. He would not go crazy every game, but some of the games he would go nuts, and I'd have to pull him back. There's always the classic that I had to pull him back. I think he said to the referee, "You're not paid to make the game even," and he got the bad look for that one, so I had to pull him back. Calling the referee a cheater, I was too late for that one. The flag went up for that one.
Well, I'll tell you, like, the first Princeton lacrosse game I ever saw was in 1990, and I didn't know it was on Finney Field, and I did not know who the head coach was. And I assumed it had to be you because you were calmly standing there watching the game, and I assumed Bill was the young assistant because he certainly fit the profile of that. And when the game ended and I had to go interview somebody, I was almost walked up to you to interview you, and then I was pointed towards Bill Tierney. And, yeah, I mean, what Bill accomplished here is extraordinary. It went beyond the on-field championships and all that, because at the time, lacrosse was an afterthought in this area. And as he built Princeton, he built the sport in this area to the point where now it's, you know, you can't walk 2 feet. You can't drive around a neighborhood in this county without seeing a lacrosse goal in somebody's backyard. And everywhere you go, you see kids holding sticks. And, you know, every night there's another field filled with kids playing lacrosse. And I think that, you know, when I think of Bill, and I agree with what you said about the people looking back fondly having played with him, and I think that, you know, it's unquestionable that he's the greatest lacrosse coach of all time, maybe the greatest coach of all time, to accomplish what he did here and then go and do it again at Denver. But really, I don't think he gets enough credit for how he built the sport around here.
I think it is generally recognized that he not only built the sport around here, but part of the given reasons that he went out to Denver was to expand the sport. And that's just one of his virtues. He really does see over the horizon, and he believes religiously in sport, but particularly lacrosse. And as a result, as much as he had deep roots in Princeton, he saw an opportunity to expand the sport. And it was very real, because during his tenure, I'm sure you know this, a number of times that some of these other elite programs who can pay a lot more than Princeton can pay made some runs at him. Virginia a couple times. I know Hopkins at least one time. I know the U.S. Military Academy at least one time, and there may have been others. And each time he favored me with a discussion about it, and following that he rejected those. But when the Denver situation came up, he called me up, said, "I'm coming over to your house," and we talked about it. And I wished him well, because I knew how he'd gone through this process before, and he made it manifestly obvious as to what he wanted to do, which was expand the sport, you know, west of the Mississippi River.
It was clear that when the Denver thing came along that he was treating that differently than any other opportunity that had come his way. Let's talk about the 1992 season. Princeton was down before Bill got here. His first year 2-13, his second year 6-8. 1990 was the breakthrough year that got to the NCAA tournament for the first time. 91 was a bit disappointing with the triple overtime loss to Towson in the quarterfinals. Do you remember what you were thinking at the end of that game? Were you thinking, you know, this is disappointing, but this team is primed for something big next year?
I can't say that I was that prescient, but I knew we had something going, and I expected that the team would continue to do very, very well because of the quality of the players we had, not only as athletes, but as men. But that having been said, part of the deal that I always express is I've been with the program a long time. We've had some terrible seasons, and it's more fun to win. But it's always been the players, and I'm still in touch with some from the years where we won 1 and 2 games. So,
well, what'd you think of the 92 season, the championship? What are your memories of the Final Four? What do you take away from Andy Moe's overtime goal that won it? What's your number one thing that stands out?
A quick review. We had 4 scrimmages the old days. We lost each of the 4 scrimmages by a goal. We lost, I think, 2 games during the season by a goal. Is that right? I've still got it. And then, of course, through the season, there were a bunch of 1-goal games. And it just seemed that this is one of these, like, the 69 Mets, where it seems like God's right hand is on your shoulder. And there we go. And we started, we were ranked 3rd, and we beat North Carolina, mainly through the help of David Morrow, scored 2 goals going end-to-end as a defenseman. And I think Syracuse scouted that, probably to their misfortune. I thought, my perception was, they were truly the first real run-and-gun team. They really pulled back as a result. We had a nice lead on them. They came back very nicely. It shouldn't have mattered. A really random bounce off that really, really cruddy initial AstroTurf and bounced out of Bacigalupo's stick because it had so much spin on it. They scored, and then, of course, the overtime. And then, of course, when Andy Moe scored after them just banging away at Batch in the first overtime, I mean, he made saves off his helmet, off his stick. It was a marvelous performance. And then, of course, when Andy Moe scored, I mean, they were definitely tears in my eyes about that. And one of the stories that I always tell is they made 1,000 T-shirts, Syracuse, 1992 national champs. They made 100 Princeton 1992 national champ T-shirts, thinking that they would be giving out the 1,000. So somewhere, somebody's got a crap load of 1992 Syracuse champion T-shirts. I still have one, still have mine in my closet.
Let's fast forward then 5 years. Princeton won again in 1994. I've often wondered, you know, if Princeton hadn't won in 1994 is kind of a forgotten championship because the first one stands out, and then the three in a row stand out, and then the last one in 2001 was the most emotional because it was Bill with his two sons. But the 94 one's kind of an overlooked championship, and I always thought that without the 94 championship, the 92 one could have been looked at as a fluke, and the 96, 7, and 8 might not have ever happened. But let's go to the 96 to 98. Now, this is we're bringing back the 97 team. It's their 20th anniversary, but a lot of those guys are from 96, 97, 98, multiple, not three national championships in a row. No team has matched that since. 43-2 run through there, the Hess, Hubbard, Massey teams, but so much more than that. You know, what are your memories of that, the 97 season specifically, going 15-0, but just that three-year run?
The 96, 97, and 98 was a perfect storm of exceptional players playing very, very, very well together. Notwithstanding that, I mean, to win three in a row, especially an Ivy League team, and, of course, dominate the 1990s like that was something that I don't think anybody could have ever thought could happen. It was, everybody talks about Hess, Massey, and Hubbard, and rightfully so, but they had very, very fine players on defense. They had great goalkeeping, and they had obviously a very, very fine head coach. And this team, probably in 96, fluke is the wrong word. It was not expected that we'd win in 96, but those guys kept winning. 97,
well,
I thought.
Well, Virginia was the team that, you know. Yeah. Was expected to win.
Yeah, and interestingly enough, in 97 and 98, I think we beat Maryland both times. I think one of those years, I can't remember which one, we were actually the underdog in all the Baltimore papers because Maryland had beaten, I think, the 2 and 3 seed or something like that, and they were just as hot as can be. I think it was 97 where that happened. Anyway, it was very gratifying to win that game, but of course any games.
So let's fast forward a little bit. I was going to throw some names at you. Let's talk a little bit about your relationship with John McPhee, because he came to the program after you'd been here for a long time. Did you know him before that?
I did. We knew one another because, as he points out all the time, we're townies. We both grew up in Princeton. Our dads were both involved with Princeton in the growing up years. And he and I, as you know, started hanging out, riding bikes together and hanging out on the sidelines about 4 or 5 years ago. Part of the impetus for that was both of us were told we really shouldn't run anymore. It's just beating up our ancient bodies too much. So we ride bikes now. And as I've said many times before, riding with John McPhee is one of the coolest things you could possibly do, because he has something to say about everything. See that rock there, Bryce? That rock came from the Whatchamajigger age, and it bakes up the building, and, you know, Alexander Hall and all this kind of stuff. And it doesn't matter. You get him going, and you ride 15 miles in, it seems like, a minute and a half.
Yeah, and the problem is when I do that, is he's always ahead of me, and I have to, like, exert so much effort to keep up with him. Talk a little bit about the new head coach, Matt Matalon, your relationship with him, and, you know, the coaching staff in general. You know, it's been a good season for Princeton. I think he's done a very good job of establishing himself as a rising young head coach. I feel like the program is in good place and is positioned well for the future.
I love Matt Matalon. I think more than anybody that I know, I was gratified when he became the head coach. And just part of the reason for that was when Coach Bates was let go, Matt Matalon, without any thought for what might happen in his future, worked extraordinarily hard to ensure that the people in the recruiting pipeline stayed with the Princeton program. He probably would have done it anyway, but the way that he did it to me just moved me. And there's an expression that Alex Hewitt and I always exchange when we meet one another. It's, I love this place. And Matt Matalon has joined Alex and I. He loves this place. As you may know, he had a job pending at the University of Vermont, and he asked them to hold off and hung in there and got our job. And I'm going to be everlastingly grateful for that.
One more person that I would be remiss if I did not bring up, and it's your wife, Phyllis, who is your constant companion through all of this, has been to nearly as many games as you have. I have a sense I know what you're going to say, but just talk a little bit about what Phyllis has meant to Princeton lacrosse and, you know, to the guys and to you.
Phyllis makes cookies for them. But from my viewpoint, Phyllis is my winning lottery ticket. Every man should be fortunate enough to get a Phyllis. She's been supportive of the lacrosse team going all the way back to Coach Robinson, who recently passed, Coach Hanna, who now is, I think he's still the athletic director up at Hobart, Jerry Schmidt, of course, who's passed, and very, 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 very tight relationship with the Tierneys. Helen Tierney, one of Phyllis's best friends. They still chat incessantly, some might say, over the phone. I can't say enough about Phyllis. She's going to be very embarrassed if she listens to this, which she probably will, but she is my winning lottery ticket.
Yeah, I think she's going to appreciate that you said that, not be embarrassed by it. Phyllis, for her, Phyllis also worked here. How many years did Phyllis work here? She was a travel coordinator, 20-something.
29 years.
And spent a lot of time working in Princeton Athletics, not just with the lacrosse program. And, the Chase family has been a big part of Princeton Athletics and not just the lacrosse program. Anything else you want to add to our little discussion?
No, but I want you to pat me on the back. I don't think I fouled the air maybe more than once, but I came close several times.
I appreciate that you took the time to be here. If anybody who played at Princeton in the last, I won't say how many years, but, a few decades, was touched by you being in their life, and I think that when they listen to this, it's going to bring all of those memories back to them, and they're going to think about all the things that you've done for them and all the support that you've offered them. And, people don't think of Bryce Chase when they think of Princeton's athletic success, in lacrosse success. They think of Bill Tierney. They think of David Metzbauer. They think of the players. And I don't think a lot of that happens without some sort of stability as the backbone of it all, and that's been you for a long time. So we are grateful that you have been that for the program, and thank you for taking the time to be with us today.
Jerry, you're making me blush here. But thank you.
So it's Saturday at 1 o'clock, face-off against Harvard. Halftime, the teams of 1967, 92, and 97 will be honored. Should be a great day for Princeton lacrosse. Big game. A win gets Princeton into the Ivy League tournament. There's 64 scenarios left for the remaining games. And of those 64, 61 get Princeton into the Ivy League tournament. But it's not etched in stone until it is. So a big game for the Tigers. Harvard obviously needs a win to get into the Ivy tournament as well. Princeton-Harvard, always a good game. So should be a good game and should be a lot of familiar faces there. And Bryce, you'll be there. And Bryce, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Jer.
It's Jerry Price, and this has been the Princeton Laxcast. We'll be back next week with Coach Matalon to talk about the game against Harvard. I may ask him a little bit about Bryce. And looking ahead to what will be the regular season finale a week from Saturday, that game will be at Cornell. And thank you once again for listening, and thanks for all of your support.